Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Ann Thomas from Horizon Land Services. Hi, Ann. How are you today?
I'm great, John. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a delight having you on the program. So tell us, what is Horizon Land Services?
Horizon Land Services is a title insurance company. It's headquartered out of New York. It's been in business for about 17 years. It's owned and run by women. Good news, bad news.
Women, I love it.
Absolutely. We get things done, and it's just, it's really a family. We don't have turnover. People retire. They don't leave.
Wow.
So it's a really great company. It's a family.
That is great that you can do that. I mean, that the company can do that. You must really offer something that's unique.
Yeah. Well, my friend and owner of Horizon Land Services, Susan McLean, had asked me to help expand the Horizon brand in the Hamptons. And, you know, with people that are involved in the buying and selling of real estate here, attorneys, realtors, mortgage lenders, builders, developers, they're a great group of people and a pleasure to work with, as is Horizon.
Oh, wonderful. So tell me, what were you doing before Horizon Land Services?
I was raised in an oil and gas exploration family in Texas and Oklahoma. So I say I've been in the oil and gas business since I was three.
Wow.
And I was in commodities trading. I built the institutional energy risk management departments. That's too many syllables. But for Citi and Chase Manhattan Bank in New York City, and then traded for a couple of hedge funds.
Wow. So that must have been exciting for you at the time.
It's a great industry. I stay abreast of it. So on any given day, I have an opinion in that category also. It's just part of my daily thought process, right. But it's a great industry.
What specifically is title insurance? I don't think a lot of people know what title insurance is.
Well, title insurance is a form of indemnity, a guarantee against loss for title defects or litigation challenging the particular interest insured on real property. Title insurance financially backs up the title reports and can be purchased on any interest in real property, including like fee simple, on mortgages, which are the most common, also on easements, leases, and life estates. No bank will issue a mortgage without title insurance.
Okay. When you said defects, sometimes the defect on the title happens when some of the documents aren't recorded. Have you ever run into that problem?
You know, we do from time to time. So lack of documentation is a break in the chain of title. These missing interests can sometimes be remedied. If, however, it is impossible to fully cure the title company can, one, refuse to insure, or two, include an exception excluding that specific area of coverage.
Is that similar to like a boundary dispute? If there's an encroachment from a neighbor onto the boundary, does that fall under the title?
It definitely does, yes. It's an easement.
It's an easement. So mm-hmm. So does the title insurance say that the, especially in the Sag Harbor Village, we have a small lots as compared to acres that are outside the village. And needless to say, a lot of times people put hedges in or a fence or something. So how does the title insurance company go around that? They go to the lawyer and say, look, on the survey, we've noticed this encroachment, or we'll just put the title insurance, but we're not going to say that piece of the land is insured.
Well, so what I can say is, you know, the title insurance is a research process through public records. And within those public records, unless there's something missing, there will be an original schematic of the land's original boundaries. So it's really about, you know, we go back 50 years in our searches. So somewhere in there was, you know, an original detail and boundary survey of the property before the hedges realigned. You know,
changed
the respective property lines.
Exactly. Understood. Now, I've heard the term hidden risk. What does that mean?
Hidden risks do exist, but they're rare. Examples are unpaid taxes, unpaid child support, invalid divorce, clerical errors in public records, fraud in the chain of title, confusion with similar names. I recently had a transaction that had an issue with a senior and a junior that we had to rectify.
And it was resolved?
Yes.
You got it done. Now, that's interesting. Okay, is there a rate scale in determining your fee?
Premiums are determined by the valuation of the property or mortgage. The premiums are state regulated. The calculations of premiums are transaction specific and can vary from transaction to transaction based on things like type of loan, new versus old money, and any number of other variables. It is unfortunately impossible to generalize premiums as a percentage of a per million. I've tried that.
And it doesn't work that way.
It's just a very complex calculation, and transaction by transaction have different components, and it varies the premium valuation.
Okay. Now, you also do commercial title insurance.
Yes, we do.
Now, is there any difference between commercial and residential?
Yes. Commercial and residential title searches are two very different animals. Commercial properties have issues that residential ones do not, such as air rights or setback restrictions. And transfer and mortgage taxes for commercial transactions are also different in many counties and jurisdictions.
So when you say air rights, for example, does that apply to residential property?
No, it's a commercial zoning. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the Hamptons, if you have a three-story building, that's a skyscraper out here. So we don't really have air rights in the Hamptons. But in the city.
In Manhattan, right. Yeah, so, because I know in Manhattan, sometimes you can sell the air rights
absolutely.
To somebody else.
But, you know, and so residential just doesn't have that issue.
So if somebody buys the air rights of a building, do they get title insurance on those air rights?
It has to be part of the, they would have to be sure that there was the right to sell air rights.
Okay.
So there would have to be a title search.
Mm-hmm. Search. Interesting. No, because I know a lot of times in Manhattan, they'll put up a condo and buy the air rights to the building that's, they don't want somebody to come in here and build another building there and then block the view of Central Park or the river or whatever the case may be.
And there are zoning issues, so you really have to,
look into that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody has some questions for you. How could they reach you?
My name is Ann Thomas, and my cell is a Texas cell. It's area code 210-744-9565, or my email, which is athomas@horizonlandservices.com.
This is John Christopher, your Real Life host, and we'll be right back after this short break on Long Island's only NPR station, WPPB, with our next guest, neorealist artist Nelson H. White. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have with me artist extraordinaire Nelson White. Hi, Nelson. How are you today?
Fine. Thank you, John.
I'm so happy you came. I've had Laura Grenning of Grenning Galleries in Sag Harbor come on the program before, and she tells this great story about when she was an investment banker, and she retired at that point, or she was thinking about moving on. I don't recall the details, but she said to me at that point, she met this artist on the beach on Shelter Island and how he changed her life. And now you're that artist. Can you give us the backstory to that?
Sure. I was doing a large painting on Crescent Beach in Shelter Island, and this girl came up to me and she said, do you ever give any instruction? I said, well, I'm trying to finish this picture. I don't have much time. She said, well, I'm 29 years old, and I've been a stock analyst with a creditly owned bank in Hong Kong, and I've made enough on the percentage of stocks to retire. So I've come to Shelter Island and bought a house, and now I'd like to dedicate myself to drawing and painting. I said, I thought to myself, well, I think I better take her on. She sounds serious. So I took her on as a pupil, and she has a tremendous talent. And then she said, well, could I go to Florence and Italy, where you say there's a wonderful school, and study there? I said, well, I think I can arrange it. And she went there, and she was between getting married, and she said, I'm going to go back to Sag Harbor and open up a gallery and represent these incredible teachers like Ramiro, and I'll represent you. I said, Laura, this is not like selling a stock. You can't be sure. She said, oh, the future is realism and impressionism. I said, well, you're young. I'm glad you feel this. Well, this was 20 years ago, and the gallery is one of the leading galleries in America for representational art.
Wow. That's amazing. That is an amazing story. So you come from a family of artists. Tell us about your family, and when did you know you wanted to be an artist?
My grandfather was a very good painter, one of the Old Lyme colony in Old Lyme, Connecticut. My father was also a painter, and it was wonderful growing up with this background and the pictures, their pictures on the wall and other painters on the wall. And then I was studying to be a violinist, but I had always been drawing and painting since I was 13. My grandfather gave me my first instruction. He was a very good teacher. And so I was painting all the time, but mainly studying the violin until I was 26. And then I went to Italy, and I thought, well, maybe I'll leave.
Can I interrupt for a second? So you were playing the violin. Were you so good at the time that you could be playing in an orchestra?
Getting towards that.
Okay.
And then I thought I had more talent as a painter. So I left the violin, but it was a wonderful background because today I use it when I relate to music. And I studied piano too, so I relate to music in my painting. And for instance, Isaac Perlman, the wonderful violinist, I listen to him when I can for the rich, deep tones. They're like the tones that I see in art, and I relate to that. And it was a wonderful background because before I start to paint, particularly go to a beach and do a painting, instead of just doing a pretty little picture, I listen to a Beethoven symphony because that's grandeur. And I want the grandeur and depth. And on Sunday,
do you
have
favorite symphonies of Beethoven?
Yes, the seventh symphony. And I was very lucky that on Sunday, when I was painting on the beach in Sag Harbor, I turned on the radio before I started painting, and there was the seventh symphony of Beethoven conducted by Leonard Bernstein, one of the old recordings.
Oh, right, because 100 years of celebrating his birthday.
And
right?
It was wonderful. He conducted it so well. It was full of rhythm and depth and grandeur. So that set me up well for the day.
Wow. Do you like Bach at all?
I certainly do. And that's why Isaac Perlman, I love to hear his Bach Toccata and Fugues. They're full of rich tones and all.
Hmm. Now, you were talking about Florence. Now, you spend your time between here and Florence, but you're involved with the Florence Academy of Art there. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I went to art school with Daniel Graves, who's a wonderful painter. And he opened up this art school, and he asked me to be on the board, and I agreed. And then I saw what was coming out of that school. I was amazed, because it's been so well done. He researched what the training was in the turn of the last century in Paris. And so I thought, well, I missed something here. I think I'm going to go back to art school. So I'm a full-time student there. Between Mondays and Thursdays, and then Thursday to Sunday, I go to the coast and do my professional work for the galleries.
Wow. So something you said earlier is that by learning, it's really expanded your horizons. when you're learning as a student.
Yes.
That's changed your whole perspective. Your art's changed somewhat.
Yes, it seems to have, my colleague said, you're a different artist today. And it has changed my work, I think, for the better.
That's wonderful. One of your mentors has been Pietro
Annigoni.
Annigoni, a world-renowned Florentine master. You have an amusing story about when he was asked to do the portrait of John Kennedy for the cover of Time magazine. Could you share that with us?
Yes. Well, Time said, "We want Maestro, I want you to do a portrait of the president, President Kennedy. And we have wonderful photographers, and we'll get you photographers." He said, "No, you get me the sittings." And they said, "Well, how do you expect us to get the president of the United States to sit? Have you asked him?" So Kennedy said, "Yes, he can come to the Oval Office for a week. And when I have 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, I'll pose for him." And that's the way he did it.
So he didn't believe in photography?
No, not at all. And that he installed in his pupils and to me. And it was a wonderful thing to have that as an example. He was an example. It's like Albert Schweitzer said, example isn't the best teacher, it's the only teacher. And that's what he was. He was an example. And because the emotion, you have the emotion when you're painting directly.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I love about your painting. It evokes so so much emotion. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Quickly, I just want to ask you about, you. One of my favorite is the self-portrait you did of yourself. Now, I know artists have been doing that over time, but I've wondered, is that difficult to do? I mean, to separate yourself from yourself?
Yeah, it's very difficult.
It is difficult.
Yes, because you keep trying to think, well, I've got to get it more like, get a more likeness as it looks in the mirror. And you begin to forget the proportions. And the proportions are what makes, along with the emotion, which makes the likeness. And you begin get so involved with, I've got to get this to look like me. And so I have to stop myself and look at the overall proportions.
That's wonderful.
And look at the small proportions and the mouth and all. John Singer Sargent, the famous portrait painter, he said, the definition of a portrait is a picture where there's something wrong with the mouth.
I like that. How can someone see some of your work?
Grinning Gallery is my main gallery in Sag Harbor. Then the Lyme Art Association in Old Lyme, Connecticut. The Mystic Maritime Gallery, which is inside of the seaport. And Jack Meyer Gallery in Houston. Those are my galleries.
Wonderful. That is wonderful. Nelson White, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, your real-life host, and we'll be right back after this short break on Long Island's only NPR station, WPPB, with our next guest, Amadeus Earhart, who is the proprietor of Hampton's House Watching Services. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest Amadeus Earhart, who is the proprietor of Hampton's House Watching. Amadeus, how are you today?
I'm good, John. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Before we start off talking about property management, can you give us a little background on yourself? I know you're originally from Germany, so how did you get from Germany to the Hamptons?
Originally, I was born in Hamburg, Germany. I moved to California at the age of 10. After college, I made my way to New York City in 1996, where I worked for one of the leading U.S. decaffeinated coffee importers, managing their logistics department. My parents were both entrepreneurs, so in 2007, I decided I wanted to follow my own entrepreneurial desires, and I became a real estate agent, which ultimately brought me to the Hamptons in 2009.
So you're a real estate agent that offers the service of property management, and how did that evolve?
I did a few summer rental deals my first year out here. Two of them had away owners and lots of little issues that ultimately I, as the real estate agent, had to deal with. They were mostly nuisance issues such as batteries and smoke detectors that gave off annoying sounds. Or simple things like the internet needing to be reset. Then that fall, I had friends of mine who asked me if I could check on their home from time to time since I was the one who lived here full time. Hence, I saw this could be turned into a business.
Yeah, because I remember we talked about this a few years ago, and you were just starting out at that time, and now you've really blossomed into quite an operation.
Absolutely. It's far from being able to be something that I could do on my own. I actually now have a team of five people, and we are at about the 30 property.
Wow. That's fabulous. So who are your customers now? I mean, originally you started out with people. So who are the customers that you're now dealing with?
The great majority, probably 99% of them, are weekend or vacation owners. And our motto is easy. When they arrive...
I like that motto, easy.
Yes, it should be easy for them. I mean, they're coming out here to relax and enjoy their time off away from the city. Right. So the motto is, when they arrive, they should not have to deal with any maintenance or issues. And if something does come up, they should know that they can just contact us and we'll just deal with it. One point of contact, problem solved.
So they don't have to deal with that.
Yep.
Any issues that would come about. Okay.
Correct. On top of that, we also have that 1%, or actually we have that one home that has a full-time year-round tenant. The owner here, they hired us because they live in Europe and the house is an investment that I actually sold to him. They need us to coordinate the maintenance and deal with anything that breaks. So for this, for example, this summer, we had a few issues. The house ended up needing a new ice maker. It needed new kitchen light fixtures and HVAC repair. All of these things are easy for us to deal with,
but difficult for somebody that's out of the country.
Exactly. First off, they're in a different time zone, and they don't necessarily always know who to call.
So you mentioned that you sold this to your client, who then made it into an investment property. So how do you package your services as one, as a real estate agent, and also as a property manager?
I basically tell all my clients that I have as a real estate agent working for Compass that I also have a property management companies. What's interesting is many times people actually approach me because they are looking first and foremost for someone who can help them once they have found the house, and then they find out that I'm a real estate agent.
So it works out that way.
It works out great.
Yeah, yeah. So what's one of the typical problems that you have to deal with as a property manager?
Our day-to-day pretty much consists of just coordinating vendors, either for service or repairs, scheduling them, getting them access, scheduling handyman projects. We actually have our own handyman that's on our salary, and this is a huge convenience. It wasn't something that I immediately realized, but it just makes a lot of our customers' lives easier. There's always a doorknob that needs adjustment.
Right. A leaky faucet or something.
Exactly. Right. And then, you know, faucets, it always depends what it is. If it's a quick handyman thing, no problem. We can take care of it. The other thing is that we also have a painter. And this is a huge advantage for us because we could just have him come in quickly. Sometimes I get an email Sunday night and say, hey, do you think we could get this done this week? And we usually have it done by Thursday when they come back out.
That's fabulous. That's great. So it makes life easy for these people.
Absolutely.
Have you had any issues that were kind of noteworthy this past summer?
Well, sometimes they're noteworthy is a big word, but let's see. The summer started out with an alarm panel that would not stop beeping.
So what do you do? You just go over there and pull all the wires out?
Well, we tried to be a little less aggressive at first. So, of course, as you would have.
It's a good thing I'm not a property manager.
Yes. As chance would have it, of course, the call didn't come in until a Friday at about 9 p.m. And so
you're like a doctor, basically, right?
You've got to try to triage things if they need attention.
Right, right. Have you ever had somebody call like at 2 o'clock in the morning?
So we are a full service company, but no, we don't have people who call us at 2 a.m. They will send us an email and then we'll respond to them during office hours. In this last case, with the beeping alarm panel that just wouldn't stop, it actually ended up taking 2 trips. And yes, we did have to pull the panels as well
as the wires.
The screamingly loud speaker.
Oh, geez. So it was nonstop. Now, could the neighbors hear this?
No, the neighbors couldn't hear it. It was an internal speaker within the house, and it was one of those speakers that had this extremely high-pitched sound, so that if there were burglars in the house, that they would just run for the hills. Right. In this case, I couldn't run for the hills.
Because you had to be there.
And I had a full family in the house with young
kids. At the same time?
Yes.
Oh, they must have loved it.
Yep.
Any issues that you haven't been able to resolve?
Not really. But one of them was, and this one's kind of funny, when my client's assistant called me and said that I needed to go fix the Apple TV and I should put the password in. When I asked them what the password is, they said, you should know this. And I said, I'm sorry, we take care of a lot of things, but not your passwords. Another one is a power outage. It's just something beyond our capabilities. Unfortunately, PSE&G had to respond to that one.
So what do you think is one of the biggest advantages of using Hampton's house watching?
I think the first and single most advantage is our vendor relationships. But aside from that, safety, for sure. Safety, I say, because we're in the homes at least once a week checking on them, looking for anything that could turn into a problem. And we can also respond. We can be at any of our homes within half an hour.
Now, where are you located? Is that because of your location?
We're located in Sagaponack.
Mm-hmm.
And so we service from east to Southampton. And hence, yes, we can be anywhere within 20 to 30 minutes.
So that's an advantage right there.
Yes.
That's wonderful. So how can somebody get in contact with Hampton's House Watching?
You can call our main office at 800-285-3914. Or you can simply Google us. Just Google Property Management Hamptons. Or even better, Google Hampton's House Watching and we'll pop right up. Or you could just remember this email address. It's a little lengthy, but it's office at Hamptons with an S, housewatching.com.
Fantastic. This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.